thoughts at the same time. Our liberty just means this freedom to exploit any weakness that you can find. I turn off the TV just for a while. Let us whisper to each other instead. I will hope that the corporate ears do not listen unless we find ourselves committing some kind of treason.
On this program are not necessarily the views of KWBA Radio or the Associated Students of the University of Oregon. Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage providing analysis and opinions of John Zerzan and the community at large. Okay, it's the August 14th Anarchy Radio. Carl is gone. He's on his bike trip. But Charlotte is here. I appreciate Charlotte coming in. Thanks a lot, Charlotte. This will be available, if anybody doesn't get it this way, live on the Connection and a Green Anarchy webpage. And I have to apologize for the poor quality of the show from that way to get it anyway. And I thought it was a little low volume-wise, so I'm saying to Carl before the program last week, you know, can't you juice up the mic? And he said, well, you get that level too high, then it starts distorting. But sure enough, I was whining. And so he turns it up, and you can't get too much out of it. It's pretty darn distorted, but that won't happen again. And Charlotte's on that. But I know that at least some people caught it in real time, as they say, and it was a good one with Rotten here giving a report about the Feral Visions gathering that was so successful. I mean, it's just everybody that I heard from on that subject was pretty excited and just had a great time in North Carolina. And he had some parting thoughts, some going away thoughts, and I thought it was excellent the way he kind of discussed his 7 years here in Eugene, and now he's moving. He will be in the state, and he will be here from time to time, and he'll be on this program from time to time, I hope. But anyway, from now on, I think we'll have a cleaner recording as far as that goes. Tomorrow is Carl's birthday, as a matter of fact. Happy birthday to Carl, and it's also Napoleon's birthday. Okay, let's see. One of the biggest things in the news is the skyrocketing price of oil, the price of a barrel of oil is more than 50% higher than it was a year ago. And of course, the gasoline prices are going through the roof. The peak oil folks, the people who theorize about that, they probably figure we're already there. We're getting into that zone already. Who knows? Who knows how these things, nobody can predict anything. And it's a kind of irony in a certain way about the extreme weather all over the place, all over this country. They're saying there'll be twice as many severe hurricanes this year, and there were a lot of them last year. And that's part of the surging price of oil. Those oil rigs out there in the Gulf of Mexico, it kind of all ties together. That's what's creating the hurricanes, evidently. I mean, you know, the whole global warming impact, it's quite well known. No one knows how fast that's going to lead to the end of the petrochemical model. Well, the other thing, and this is just another... Once more, the banality of what's happening in Iraq vis-a-vis the U.S. There was a column in the Times today, someone tell the president the war is over. Well, that's the sign of the times. And I don't know whether this has ever happened in history where the military of one country says, we don't want any more troops because that would just mean more targets. That's how you spell defeat. I mean, I don't even know if that's ever happened before, that an army doesn't want any more troops. They'll be weaker with more troops. That's a lesson, but it really hasn't been learned since Vietnam. I mean, if you think about why that is. Well, I think I'll get into some news and then discussion of various things. 346-0645, or of course kwvaradio.org on the old internet. Pardon me one second, let me get a little swig of water here. Thank you. Well, there was a very interesting wildcat strike in England at Heathrow Airport in London Thursday, Friday. This was occasioned by the firing of 800 mostly Asian, mostly women catering employees of British Airways, and promptly over 1,000 baggage handlers, loaders, drivers, check-in people walked out, and it completely paralyzed British Airways at the peak of the holiday season, the summer season, and they're still getting over that, although it didn't last very long. In Buenos Aires, there were bombings at the Dante Alighieri Institute, which is a kind of a foreign chamber of commerce for Italian culture, and also at a branch of the National Labor Bank in Buenos Aires in solidarity with anarchists in Italian prisons. This goes back to basically May, where there were about 200 raids carried out against anarchists. So these actions were in solidarity and support. Writing on the walls said, free the anarchists in Italy. Well, next weekend, the Anarchy Action Camp in the East Bay, up in the hills of the East Bay, put on by the Berkeley anarchists, the study group people, the Anarchy magazine people. And also, let's see, is that... No, that's 2 weeks away. 2 weeks away. The 27th, 28th is also going to be an anti-authoritarian fair in Istanbul. Green Anarchy will be represented. And by the way, some bad news from Istanbul. When I was there a month ago, there were a lot of anarchists involved in this, in the support for Mehmet Tarhan, who is a young anarchist who refused his military service, and they were having different demonstrations and meetings and so on. Well, he got 4 years, which is an unprecedented sentenced for its severity. They've been trying to kind of ignore the folks, and I think it probably had something to do with making them look better for possible EU membership. It's kind of unclear, but they really hadn't always been prosecuting people who had just who had refused their conscription. But they came down on this guy, and so that's a blow. They're, of course, going to appeal it, and they're trying to figure out what to do next in a defense of Mehmet. Let's see. There's a tree sit going on out at the Biscuit in southwest Oregon, the giant site of the fire. There's certainly been efforts to stop the logging, largely unsuccessful at the Biscuit timber sale. A 17-year-old, a young woman named, it's right in front of me, but I can't see it. I'll find it anyway. This is a new blockade, an effort to stop the logging. Let's see. Well, yeah, this is, and you can contact Wild Siskiyou Action if you want, 541-659-2682. That's 541-659-2682. And she's 50 feet in the air on a platform. And, yeah, this is still going on. There's been a lot of discussion, kind of a reorientation debate, you might say, or at least trying to figure out what are the better tactics in the face of the more all-out assault on the forests, on the old growth. I certainly salute this person, although I gotta say, from the news thing that they put out, it sure sounds like they're still doing this whole media, it's all about playing to the media. Not that being in a dangerous position 50 feet up is just a media image, but, you know, I don't know, I think this is an ongoing thing, and it has to be a re-examination of what works, and that's a tough one. You know, that's a real challenge. Yep, there's that. And let's see. I want to just, well, it's got a handful of news here. I'll just go through a little bit of it. A former Penn State student was charged with causing about $500,000 worth of damage on the Penn State campus. Craig Tonick, age 19. He's going to serve somewhere between 2 and 5 years in prison. He was arrested in April, and it's a little unclear what this is about. In a way, it's definitely a political group with anarchist in the title. This was a fire at the University School of Architecture and Landscape Arts, and anyway, that's not good news. There's a new kind of chat board forum kind of thing called Green Chaos Collective, and you can just look that up, Green Chaos Collective or Green Chaos Forums, and this is just getting off the ground. It's kind of a calendar and apparently some sort of forum board. Well, there sure is a lot of sad eco-type news. A vast expanse of western Siberia is undergoing an unprecedented thaw, an area the size of France and Germany combined. It's the entire subarctic region of western Siberia. And the point is, among other things, the thawing will release billions of tons of methane, which is a greenhouse gas 20 times more potent than carbon dioxide. And this, they are saying that if this keeps on going in this direction, there'll be, it's been described as an ecological landslide that's probably irreversible and will really jack up the whole global warming thing and make, and caused the predictions about future global temperatures to be revised upwards in a serious way. And you know, this is a reminder too. I mean, this is another thing that maybe this could be sort of charted out, but it's also evidently the case that there won't be necessarily gradual degradations or breakdowns of ecosystems. There's a lot of literature now that predicts that they'll just be sudden. And not that this is comforting, that this thawing is happening. It's obviously, it isn't quite like that. It's hard to sort of top that one with anything, but yeah, this was in Thursday's Guardian from England. And here, closer to home, starving birds and fewer fish along the Oregon coast, a warning sign that a dead zone may be developing as a result of global warming. Greater pollution in western Wyoming at Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Parks due to drilling for natural gas, lots of haze and pollution. It reminds, there have been more stories about the Columbia Gorge, by the way, which really was and still is a gorgeous place, a fantastically beautiful place, but increasingly polluted, just full of pollutants now, mostly coming from the eastern part of the state, from mining and agriculture. Well, it's nothing compared to the gigantic acrid haze at the end of the week here in Malaysia from forest fires in neighboring Indonesia. And this has to do with agriculture and mining. State of emergency in Malaysia. They had to shut down several of the major cities there. All government offices and workplaces and factories and ports and everything else, just extremely poisonous. And yeah, this is just more domestication, more just really poisonous. The worst environmental crisis since 97. It was enormous in 97. That it lasted a long time and covered other countries. Development marches on, and also in the melting news here in the Alps. Well, I got actually not to get too tedious with this, but here's, well, yeah, the one in the Austria's largest glacier, shrinking from 13 to 26 feet a year, and there goes the grandeur, and I suppose there goes the skiing, and all the rest of it. You can get this just about every day. The permafrost is disappearing, and this, you know, all these things are plainly linked. From Zurich, the World Glacier Monitoring Service says that all the world's glaciers are likely melting, and increasingly negative mass readings consistent with accelerated global warming. Well, the details are not so, you know, they're not so much the point, but, well, I've got a mountain of stuff here that I'm trying to figure out where I'm at with, but, you know, just, I'm going to get to this probably in two or three different ways during the hour tonight, and again, I invite people to jump in here, 346-0645, but, you know, with all this going on, when people say, gee, I think politics should have something to do with this reality that's being borne in on us faster and faster, and not just us, obviously, but all the other species. And yet people who do that in some quarters are just treated as just kooks. And these are the supposedly sophisticated social theory people, the radicals. And it just kind of amazes me. I guess I'll continue to be dumbfounded by it. I don't know. I think at the same time, I think there is something that's being clarified. Although some people don't want this clarified. Some people, speaking of acrid haze, put up this big kind of continual evasive behavior because they don't really want to say, look, we like the techno culture, we like mass society, we like mass production. We like all of its basic features, and we really don't want to go there. They're not quite, willing to just cop to that. So they come up with all sorts of stuff. Well, we'll get on to that, I'm sure. We have a call? Oh, in 7 minutes. Okay. Wow, we're highly organized here. We're very precise. 7 minutes. Okay, let's see. Well, for example, one of my favorite outlooks is the anti-state communists. And, of course, they, another Marxist configuration, and they try to remain current. And I think part of it, as I just said, part of it is this kind of smokescreen stuff. Somebody said, I thought this was kind of funny, maybe the anti-state communists will tangle with the anti-state capitalists. They could have another Cold War. They could have an anti-Cold War. These things are really kind of, I think they're pretty goofy on many levels. But I'm chambering at the bit to get into that, and I know I will. Another, speaking of other news stuff here, one thing I forgot to mention, the Zapatistas. This was just as another end of the week thing. And speaking of being evasive, maybe some people have a better reason, or it's more justified to speak in certain tongues that nobody really gets just where you're coming from. But, now they're going to participate in the elections. And, people have their attitudes about that. But the point is, some people, some anarchists, were always very resistant. Well, you can't pose any questions about what is the EZLN and what's it about, and, implying that you have any criticism. Well, the nationalism, the leftism, these things just, I hate to sound like I'm all determinist about it, but how many times has this been run through in, say, the past 50 years, and they sort of always turn out the same way? And maybe they don't have to turn out the same way, but I think some people don't want to. They want to be fooled. They don't want to look at things in a sober way. And I'm not saying I think that's some easy call. I'm not super informed about all that, and I think part of that is by design. They have sent out all sorts of contradictory comments or rhetoric, and you can believe whatever you want. And that's, and now, some of these people are going to be sorely disappointed. But why would they be so shocked is the real question. And again, I'm not sitting here trying to utterly condemn the Zapatistas, but the point is, it really helps if you're interested in analysis, if you're interested in asking what's going on, instead of, oh, that sounds nice, maybe in a few minutes the caller will chime in about that. Yeah, there's a lot of, there's so many more questions than anything else. I was reading this thing about cell phones and how, it's kind of well known, but there was a piece about 7-Elevens. You certainly don't have to go to any technology outfit to get cell phones. They're right over by the Slurpees. There's this whole thing about how it's the easiest thing. Now there's more and more millions of them every week or something, and they're just another, just another mass-produced thing, highly toxic mass-produced thing. But we're all marching along and made to feel that we couldn't exist without them. And I think, I don't know whether this is totally connected or not, but there was a piece today that kind of brings up a sort of perennially interesting question, it seems to me, is kind of the larger question of what's going on in today's New York Times in the financial section. Piece called My Generation, Hope I Shop Before I Get Old. And what they're comparing, this piece is mostly, the setup is about Generation X. You remember that, the 90s, the early 90s, the Gen Xers and all that. Supposedly cynical, apathetic, disillusioned, withdrawn, anti-commercial, angry, and so on. Kind of upset with the waves of commercialization and consumerism. But now, according to this little summary deal, is that, well, everything was completely messed up, but you couldn't do anything about it. So the final paragraph here, and this is all about the age of increasing cynicism, that's for sure, because the kind of the punchline is, you know, it's like my life is hard enough already, so if splurging on a big entertainment unit makes me feel better, why not? I mean, that's kind of in there. I mean, that's kind of, maybe that's a good way to sum it up. I know a lot of people like that. They know the whole nine yards. You can't, you know, it's not like they're dumb. It's not like they haven't heard what's going on. But what are you going to do about it? What's out there to plug into that makes sense, that's made any difference, you know? In other words, if this kind of profile or stereotype about Gen Xers was true in the first place, you know, the disillusioned anger and so forth, the kind of dark side of the slacker thing or whatever you want to call it, well, it has to go somewhere. And if it's got nowhere to go, it's not too hard to figure, well, then people are just going to say, well, hell, I might as well buy something. What's the point? I mean, we're all going under, and I mean, that's not surprising. And that's really another way to frame the whole thing. So why isn't there somewhere to go? Or why are some people so stuck with this loser stuff, you know, and ain't going to give it up and are so hostile to stepping out of that framework or to people who have stepped out of it and who are questioning technology and civilization and a dozen other things, but some people won't go there. Okay, we got somebody on there? Hello there. Hi. Are you with us? I don't hear anything.
Hello?
Oh, hi there. Oh, now we got somebody.
Trey? Hey, John, what's going on?
I don't know. What's going on with you, man?
Not much, man. More of the same, more of the same. I've been really, really busy up at this kind of clearinghouse for, like, radical organizations up in Portland. It was in the old Cascadia Florence Alliance office on Clinton Street. You know about them?
No. What's that about?
Well, apparently it used to be an anarchist collective. But, like, the anarchists got chased out eventually, and then CFA got chased out because somebody accused them of some inappropriate sexual behavior. And now I just got kicked out, and, like, the other manager just got kicked out because CFA doesn't like the fact that we're actually out there doing stuff, and they're not.
I'm sorry, I missed. CFA is what?
Cascadia Forest Alliance.
Oh, yeah. Is that the same as Cascadia Forest Defenders?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. I don't know. It's impossible to tell because, like, the whole security culture thing has gotten to the point where you can't even have a straight conversation with anybody anymore. So, like, and, like, you even asking some of that stuff just makes you an infiltrator right there.
Asking what? Like, what's going on? You mean?
Yeah, like, what's going on? And of course, since, like, the information is so closely guarded by this elite, like, few people, at this point, the whole information network's breaking down because anybody could infiltrate a system like that in the first place. And secondly, the leaders are becoming some kind of, like, neo-hippie, like, yogi, you know, collective pimps or something. I don't know.
Wow, you know, in the past year or so, I don't know much in a direct way about this, but I can tell you a couple of years ago or so, and I would be hard-pressed to say I think this has changed a lot, but there were sexual predators at some of these camps. And
there still are. I mean, there's no police involved with these people, and they don't have their own appointed security. So, of course, there's going to be problems.
And so, well, what do you suggest in terms of what the situation is now?
Judo? I don't know.
Judo?
Yeah, actually, I was trying to get a school up in Portland to come over to the office and use our space to teach girls judo. I mean, who's going to fuck with those girls?
Or women is
or women,
another way to put
it.
Or
women, as the case may be, or men. And you know the other thing is, like, this collect... What's that?
got to watch the language.
Oh, sorry. Because, like, we had, like, a whole, like, a 1,500-book lending library. We had all the zines categorized and everything, like, everything from everywhere. We had a bike lending library with, like, over 100 bikes in the basement. We had, like, a little staff office area in the front, like your office here. We were just about to do a radio show like yours, except that, like, not like yours. We were just going to do more of a comedy thing and music, and then, like, maybe lay out some issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, they just tanked the whole idea just because they're haters. Like, I'm not saying just because they're haters. I mean, some of their gripes were legitimate, and some of this, some of what I was trying to do anyway, which was bring all these organizations together, like PETA, Cop Watch, the CFA people as well, since they were paying the rent on that building, you know, Free Geek people. There's a whole collective of dumpster divers now who have their own zine, so you can go find out where to get anything now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And just, like, try to pull all these, like, really keyed up, important collectives, pull them all together as far as, like, having a clearinghouse for information so that they can, you know, like, have fundraising and stuff without actually having to get involved with that end of the industry.
Well, some things are bottoming out, I hate to say it, but maybe even across the board, and it's a deeper question, but you're talking about a particular...
Well, a
thing
lot of the
Portland,
media
huh?
sites are losing servers, and they're all disappearing all over the country, and a lot of people are afraid, John, to even admit to being an anarchist anymore. I mean, I've always said I was just a fashionable anarchist, you know, like back in high school, a little patch, you know. But, I mean, like, you're the real deal, and, you know, it does kind of make you a target. I don't know, like, that kind of gets off where I'm going with this, though. I'm glad that you're you. I'm glad that you do what you do. I can't say that enough times. How's the book coming?
Oh, it's going well. You mean Against Civilization?
No, I was talking about the biography.
Biography.
Yeah, for you.
I don't know about any biography.
We want to know more about you, man.
Oh,
it should
yeah.
be an autobiography at least, man.
It should
I
be,
mean,
it,
come on.
It would
when
be a
we
bestseller.
Are going to find out the rest of your story, dude? You're a star, dude. If you don't see that, you're selling yourself short.
This helps me out a lot, man.
Than those junk radio air show hosts, not to mention any names, or Martin Downey Jr.
There we go. Well, thanks for calling, man. If maybe somebody else has part of this picture, I don't know.
Okay, just one other thing. I met a record label tonight that's putting out a war album. They want you on it. Are you signed to a record label?
I think you got the wrong show, man.
No, really. I mean, you're big, dude. You don't even know, dude. You're so proud and, like, humble. Like, it's just amazingly that like, a person like you is involved with us.
Man, somebody paid you to
drink
me around.
No, I swear to God, man. And I'll say this for everybody listening. I do not know this man well. I met him once. I just happened to be all about his show. And like I was saying, I've been an activist for a while on and off. And I've been up in Portland trying to get a kind of new thing going. And I really have not been paid to say any of this. The record label wants to talk to you, though. Like,
okay.
I got to their info, and I'll give that to you later.
All right. Well, I'm in the book. Hey, thanks for calling, Trey.
No, thank you for being who you are and putting your neck on the line every day for all of us.
Feels good. I haven't had any problems.
Yet.
Take it easy.
Knock on wood.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that was kind of strange. I don't know what that was about, but... And I didn't know that was going on up there with the forest defenders and their space and all the rest of it. But some of it sounds a little familiar. I'm not trying to splice the two there together because I don't know. But I don't know. I'm curious about what's going on right here. And like I said before, you know, it's this continuing discussion about what the heck to do. It'll be effective and not just burn people while they're logging off what old growth is left in the new order. Well, I was reading this. This is end of the week news too. Greenpeace in Australia, supposedly the there's a coal dredger plant in Victoria, the dirtiest in the developed world, according to Greenpeace, and they certainly do all kinds of stuff. I wish I knew more about this controversy that was a couple of issues ago in the Earth First Journal. Maybe we'll get into that. Maybe I'll find that. But you know, speaking of hidden stuff, I'm really, you know, I do salute the, especially the people that that take physical risks that, on some of these occasions. I mean, they are putting themselves out there, and but I've been trying to, not for the first time, and this is another. There are reasons why this is done as well. There are reasons why people are not always straight up, and I'm not issuing some full out across the board condemnation. But I was looking at the website. I was looking at the Greenpeace thing. Greenpeace has 2.8 million members, and if you're kind of looking for, well, where are they? What is their basic philosophy? How far would they go, or what do they think about the whole setup, the whole order, the whole system, and what part of it do they reject? What would they like to see? You know, something like that. Well, all you get is, we're against bad things. We're against the bad things, environmental. Well, that's okay, but, and you know, probably that's why they get money from 2.8 million people, you know, on a worldwide basis. But, you know, I just keep thinking that you can run after every outrage, every excess, every issue, and I'm glad they're doing it. You know, I'm not saying I'm not, but Where's the vision? Where's the picture of where are they contributing in any way, actually, to what needs to be done? Except, like, you know, drive a boat out there and try to save some seals, which is excellent. But isn't there a little more? Isn't it time that we, have to face the fuller thing as it is hitting us faster and faster? So I don't know. Maybe somebody out there might have a comment about Greenpeace. You see on these different this thing is all around, and I want to go back just for a moment here. We only got 20 minutes left, but this question of technology, how do we talk about it? I mean, this has been around a while. This is one of the pressing things. This is a big part of it, I think, to a lot of people. It's kind of hard to miss. And, you know, not to browbeat this thing into submission once again, but the social relations thing, there are people who say, okay, let's talk about technology, but you can't do it without talking about social relations. Okay, sure, you know, let's do it that way. There isn't ever step one. That's always just there, and nothing ever begins, which makes me more than suspicious, but okay, social relations, how about social institutions? And that's moving us a little closer in maybe more concrete way. For example, division of labor, domestication. But the people, I think, that keep saying social relations, you can't really talk about technology without or until you talk about social relations, and they never do talk about technology, they don't want to say what they think about division of labor, for the same reason that the anti-state communists, and these are some of the same people, are not going to, you know, give you a straight answer about the thing in general, about the dominant paradigm, about massification and industrializing world, all of that, or any part of that. They'd rather stay with abstractions. And you know, I think if we're trying to get closer to fleshing out how that works, let's try that. Okay, social relations. You know, I don't know of anyone who refuses that, but it'd be nice to get somewhere with that, and maybe a little more honesty. I mean, there are some people that are still turning over the rocks, hoping something crawls out from Marxist theory. And they just will not get that that discourse is really over. That discourse has failed. That whole project, not just theoretically, but practically, just hasn't cut it. It just has failed so monstrously. And yet there are a lot of people who call themselves anarchists who are led around by these people. And I get a little fed up. Well, on a slightly more uplifting tone, I'll get back to some more concrete stuff and the available media here. Resurgence magazine, this is just a small point here, but Resurgence is not the most ferocious radical thing around, although it sometimes has some nice stuff in there. The cover story, the current one, refers to the four pillars of sustainability. Sustainable living, they say, stands on four pillars: science, spirituality, technology, and art. And anyway, I'm not going to go into a full-scale bashing of Resurgence magazine, but I thought it was a positive point that Kirkpatrick Sale reviewed Derek Jensen's Culture of Make-Believe and gave it a very favorable review. It seemed a little out of place, but maybe that's a good sign for the openness and the direction that Resurgence, too, may be going in, because Kirk Sale is very big on it, and it's all about civilization. That's what we call this, and that's what has to be confronted, and he's all for it. And they published it. Meanwhile, something a little less wonderful, not a giant surprise, but it seems like there's maybe a little bit of a shift, another shift for the worse with the Sierra Club. Cover of their current issue, July-August, Sierra magazine, is "Can Technology Save the Planet?" And just page after page, of course, answering in the affirmative. You know, we need a cybernetic industrial base. You know, it's time to embrace technology. Here's a quote toward the end. "We need to grasp the artificial environment from a full, long-term, holistic perspective." Oh, that's what's been missing. We just have to look at it in a holistic way. And, it just goes on and on. And yet they seem to be a little bit haunted by primitivism, or what some people call primitivism, because it winds up kind of apropos of nothing, kind of out of nowhere, that Stone Age people caused massive losses in biodiversity. I'm quoting here: "If mega creatures were still wandering Yosemite and Yellowstone, they would be a boon to ecotourism, but they're not around, mostly because Stone Age humans ate them all." And it goes into this whole mass extinction thing. Now, let's wait a second here. First of all, even if that were true, would that justify this rush toward the technoculture, which is just, I find just really disturbing? They're referring to, I think, the theory that there was overhunting at the end of the Pleistocene about 11,000 years ago, and led to the extinction of some mammals like the land sloth. But this is only a theory, and there are a lot of people that don't subscribe to it. It makes it sound like, well, what I just read, with Stone Age humans killed everything, massive. If you didn't know anything about this, you might think, well, what are they talking about, the dinosaurs? But, of course, that was 50 million years ago, and humans are only about 3 million years old, no matter how you slice it. Or maybe they're talking about the buffalo in that area. The buffalo that you couldn't, you know, the human eyesight couldn't even see the end of, these enormous herds that covered, like, states or something like that. I mean, you know. Or wait a minute. I guess Stone Age humans killed them all, didn't they? Or, you know, in other words, they have to bash the uncivilized, untechnical people for some reason. It's really something. But you'll find this just remarkable if you look at it. It just seems like a full shift, a full tilt toward. It's the only thing is to just go along with what has been so awful so far. Well, we just need more of it. Yeah, well, I think that's that ought to work. Yeah. Just as the doubts, the exhaustion, the toll of it all seems so impossible to overlook, the Sierra Club comes up with this. There's just one more part of this issue, the current issue. This is about little robots that they have sensors so they can sniff out toxic wastes. So robotics is cool. I mean, they never wonder where the robots come from. The industrialism and the assault on nature needed to make robots, and the piece says environmentalists aren't used to thinking of technology as an ally. Well, how about that? Yeah, I guess that's true. Here's something that I really, maybe there's something here. I've heard this before just a little bit, but there's a piece, and you might be surprised that I'm somewhat positive about this, at least tentatively, by Jeff Shantz, who is with the Toronto NEFAC, the anarcho-communist or the anarchist-communist people. And this is arguing for, it's posted on InfoShop in the middle of the week, Wednesday, the 10th, Radical Ecology and Class Struggle, a Reconsideration. It's kind of a critique of Murray Bookchin, which I'm not going to go into, but what it's calling for is green syndicalism, of all things. I mean, I've heard of green Marxism, and I ain't swallowing it. That's just opportunism, if you ask me. That's just they're trying to put a little coat of green on the old stuff. But I don't know. Maybe there's some of it seems a little iffy. Talking about the Judy Berry time of the Wobblies and the Wobblies and the timber workers and so forth. Well, certainly holding that up as a positive start. And then here's the line, the history of worker struggles becomes part of the history of ecology. Well, I think the verb isn't exactly precisely put. You can't rewrite history. Maybe you're hoping that it becomes part of that it will become part of the history of ecology, which is a bit of a stretch. But anyway, toward the end, this pitch for green syndicalism seems to call for dismantling of the factory system, its work discipline, hierarchies, regimentation of all things, which and so forth. This involves, I'm just reading toward the end of this thing, this involves both an actual destruction of some factories and their conversion toward soft forms of small local production. Well, I think it's more qualitative than just some factories. It's the whole relationship to the earth and humans. I mean, it isn't a quantitative thing in my opinion. But anyway, if they're really talking about in a serious way and making that a key feature, that would be interesting. Dismantling the factory system. I'm down with that. I want to hear more. I'm listening. This is kind of surprising. I don't know what is going to happen with this among the workerists and productionists, the different commies. I don't know if they're going to go for this, but it's great that some people are thinking along these lines. Well, it's 3460645. There's still a little time. Well, let's see, a dog got cloned about 10 days ago. That's great. It's called a dry run for human cloning. very difficult to do. A couple of hundred dogs bit it to further this little Frankenstein maneuver, but that's part of the it's part of the logic, part of the long march toward complete dehumanization and cyborgization and the techno thing. Now let's see. You know, it's maybe it sounds like I'm just emphasizing the more obvious ecocidal things in terms of how rapidly the extreme weather is happening, how rapidly the biosphere is being poisoned. But it's when we shouldn't lose sight of the other part of it, or another part of it, and that is the terrific amount of dehumanization as everything speeds up, and as the texture of life leaches out, is consciously leached out. There's more about that. I'm not saying it's acknowledged in terms of what should be part of the conversation in society and the general consciousness, but it's coming out there in certain ways. That, you know, there's a column by Ellen Goodman, who's, I think, just a pretty good liberal, but she's talking about a world of hyperactive technology where it's characterized by continuous partial attention, and, you know, and you've got to add the anxiety disorders and the tenfold increase in autism and all the rest of it. You know, I was actually looking at a self-help book which found its way into the ecology activism section at the University of Oregon bookstore, and I got to bring this in to be more exact about it, because I can't even think of the title. Oh God is part of the title, but and this is somebody who, I think Lisa Goldhorn is the name, has written at least one big self-help bestseller, and the book starts out with just a complete quickie picture of how awful it is. And she's saying it's only anxiety and stress which is driving this whole mess. I mean, it's just negative stuff that's just keeping it going. I mean, it's awful. It's just such a toll. And she refers to all the rest of it, you know, just the everything you can think of, the terrorism, nuclear weapons, proliferation, and all, you know, another 50 things that just would roll off the tongue in terms of the worsening picture delivered up by the dominant model as it goes forth. And I thought, gee, that's getting into these self-help things, which are, you know, usually, as I understand it, quite focused on the individual. You know, they're not supposed to be some kind of social deal, but it's intruding even into there. But this is my favorite. Maybe we're going to wind up with this one as we're running out of time here. Somebody gave me this yesterday, the latest issue of the Weekly World News. I haven't seen this in a long time. It's just great. Evidently, well, the headline of the story is New Dark Age Coming. Scientists have discovered that there are going to be three different solar flares, or some kind of sun thing, solar storm. It's going to just blow away the whole modern economy and communications and everything. So I'm reading along, huh? Gee, the Weekly World News is is talking about the collapse. They must be collapsists. Anyway, this is the rundown according to this professor. He's described as a retrofuturist. That's pretty great. For a while, there will be massive rioting and wholesale violence on a global scale, but we have that anyway in our sick world. When communication is reduced to pencil and paper or smoke signals, and medicine returns to the days of herbs and house calls, people will rediscover their roots, their culture. Books will be read once again. Open-air plays will be performed. Places of worship will function as community centers. Fancy dress balls and square dances will be all the rage. People will bathe together in rivers and lakes and get to know their neighbors. Horses and buggies will replace cars. The pace of life will be slow and we will live less stressed out lives. I can't see how that's a bad thing at all. Anyway, another scientist that is has the last word, the final paragraph. The man's an unreformed hippie, Dr. Bonsai huffed. If nothing else, think of the sunburn from all those hot ions. What's he going to do, put mud on his arms? So, but you got your primitivists all over, even in the weekly world news. Okay, thanks, Charlotte. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
For consumers trying to watch their weight, here's news to go nuts over. An article